Okay, welcome to Bio-231 Human Anatomy Summer Session, July 22nd. Let's take a look at the schedule. Okay, we're going to start talking about the heart today. That's kind of a fun chapter. Heart disease is real important, major killer of people. So we got to understand the anatomy really, really well. Today you also have practicum number 3. Last time we had exam number 3. Graded and online, and in lab I'll tell you some stuff about exam number 3. Maybe I'll have some remediation. Everybody seemed to miss the section on the ear, like the function of the semicircular canals and vestibule and things like that. So if you can demonstrate competence to me in some kind of quiz or whatever I make up for you, then you can get those points for that part of the test. Okay? But so I got to tell you how to study for it and figure out why that information was missing somehow, and we'll be able to fill in the grades. Of course, we got to do that within 2 weeks, right? Because that's when the class is over. We got 2 more weeks after this week. Actually, a week and a half, because school is done on, I got here, Tuesday. Guess what? That's probably a Wednesday, right? I'll double check on that. All right, so that's the schedule. Next week, we don't have a lecture exam, no practicums, but we probably do have some lab quizzes next week. And if I look, the 27th, Monday we have a lab quiz. Tomorrow, no lab quiz, 2 lab quizzes next week, and then the last week of school, we got one on Monday as well. Anybody have a question on the schedule? We're pretty good with that. All right, so let me put that away. Find the materials that we want to be looking at. That mirror looks really good, but I think I want to find the lecture notes first and take a look at those. All right, so heart, respiration. Here we go. All right, so first let's talk about the size and shape of your heart, and I'm going to pull up the pictures of a heart right now. Okay, so this probably is a good place to start. All right, so when I look at the heart, I see a geometric shape. All right, so I don't want you to think about this part of the illustration, part A. Just want you to look at part B. And I want you to look at the overall shape. So if you look at the overall shape of the heart, does it look like a square or a circle or an oval, or what does it look like? Oh, yeah, yeah. Let me turn those lights down. So that, and that. All right, so what's the overall shape of that thing? Circle? Would you say circular? Square? Okay, what about circular? Who votes for circular? Circular? Square? Who votes for square? Nobody. Okay, that's good. What about triangular? Anybody like triangular? Oh, I see a bunch of hands. That's right. Think of it as a triangle or a pyramid, right? Because it's 3 dimensions. We're just looking at it in 1 dimension. And what do we call the tip of a pyramid, the very top? I don't know if you've taken geometry or not, but that is the apex, right? So here is the pointy end of the triangle, and what do we call the part of the pyramid that sits on the ground? That is the base, right? So the heart has a base, which is the widest part. The narrowest part and pointy part is the apex. And the apex is pointing a little bit to the left, and it's inferior. The base is more superior, and it's kind of pointing to the right. Your heart is about as big as your fist, right? And it's located in your chest just like that. So let's go to the next picture and maybe even the next one. So it's a little bit hard to see the heart, right? Because we have some ribs and sternum superimposed on top of it. But if we were to look at the heart right here, is it, well, we know it's not straight up and down, right? It's kind of pointed over to the left. What side of your body is the heart mostly occupying? Is it on equally on the right and on the left? Or is it more on the left than the right? Or is it more on the right than the left? It's more on the left. Look at this over here. So we have a lot more heart on the left. Everybody kind of knows that from watching TV, right? And indeed, that is true. So we've been looking at a lot of things in this class where there is very nice symmetry, right? If you have a radius on one side of your body, you got a radius on the other. You got an eyeball on one side of your body, you got an eyeball on the other side. And now for the heart, since you only have one of them and it's angulated like this, the symmetry is kind of gone. So this is a first organ where we miss some of that symmetry. And that's going to be true for a lot of organs that we look at. So as you move from base to apex, all right, the heart is angulated to the left, right? So that if we want a nice longitudinal section, it will have to be oblique, right? It will have to be at an angle. All right, well, there's something else too, which you can't see from this illustration very well, right? Not only as you go from the base to the apex is the heart angulated to the left, but as you go from base to apex, the heart is also angulating outside of your body. It's angulated anteriorly. So there are two angles that the heart sits in your body. As you go from base to apex, it's to the left. Base to apex, it's also anterior. So there's a biaxial tilt to the heart, and that's just the way it goes. And when the heart beats, when the ventricles contract, it's very vigorous. It pounds, right? And it actually pounds up against the wall of your thorax. And you can feel that point where the apex pounds up against the wall of the thorax right here, and that's called the point of maximal impulse, or PMI. Everybody's heart is in a little bit different location, and if you want to know exactly where somebody's heart is, you can palpate it. You can feel where that apex is. And if somebody's really thin, maybe you have a really sick patient and they've lost a lot of weight, you can actually see that point, that little point on somebody's chest just come pounding out, right? Point of maximal impulse is where the apex pounds up against the wall of the thorax. All right, what else do we want to see? Biaxial tilt. Ah, here's another important landmark. So here are two things, okay, actually three things that this is a really good picture. All right, so we can see the tilt to the left very easily right here. Okay, so the three things that you have to know about a heart, and a lot of everything else, anatomy of the heart will just kind of fit into position really nice. Remember, like a forearm, you had to know the pronator teres and brachioradialis, and then everything else made sense. Use those as landmarks. So there are three landmarks on the heart. Apex is number one. And is that easy to find? That's really easy to find, even if it's a real heart. The base of the heart, which is the widest part, that's going to be easy too. All right, but now we got to figure out what is left, what is right, what's anterior, posterior, and there's another really good landmark. And it is this depression right here on, and this is called the anterior longitudinal sulcus. Anterior longitudinal sulcus, it's a depression. There's a very important coronary blood vessel that lies in that depression, and there's room for other things, and the other things that I see is fat. All right, so here's a little depression. Spaces aren't wasted in your body, so there is adipose tissue that grows in that spot. And the muscle tissue is red and really dark. The fat, when you looked at that eyeball, it kind of looked white. So there's really good contrast between the fat in this anterior longitudinal sulcus and the heart muscle itself, and you'll be able to identify this thing from across the room. That's going to be really nice. All right, so you got apex, which is easy, got base, which is easy, this anterior longitudinal sulcus, which is easy to find, and now you know everything about the heart. So over here is going to be the left side, over here is the right. And that's going to be the basis for your understanding of the heart. Okay, just those three things. Apex, base, anterior longitudinal sulcus. A depression. It is easy to find because there are other sulci on the heart and other coronary blood vessels, but they always go straight from the base down to the apex, even on the posterior side. They go from base to apex straight down, but notice this anterior longitudinal sulcus is on a diagonal. It like wraps around the heart. It's going to look like a candy cane stripe or a barbershop stripe on the heart, so that will be really easy to see. Okay. right, let's talk about some chambers of the heart. One of the first figures, this one right here, is really good. You probably will want to refer to this slide a lot when we come to this chapter. And as a matter of fact, I could almost give the whole lecture on this one particular slide. And the orientation of the heart is nice, right? I see the angulation to the left. I see the apex. I see the base. But here's a nice coronal section, so I don't see that anterior longitudinal sulcus. But now we can look inside the heart. And I see that there are some holes, right? And those holes are chambers. And these chambers fill up with blood. When the heart contracts, then this blood is pressurized and forced into the next compartment that it has to flow into. And there are two different kinds of chambers. Near the base, there are two atria. And at near the apex of the heart, there are two ventricles. And which one has a thicker muscle wall, atria or ventricle? Can you tell on this illustration? Which one is the muscle thicker, the muscle wall, atrium or ventricle? Atrium or ventricle, and you all notice that the ventricle is much thicker. So what can you tell me about a muscle that's bigger and thicker compared to another one? It's stronger, right? So the ventricles are the major pumps in the heart. They're the biggest, strongest muscles, right? And if you count the number of chambers in the heart, how many are there? How many chambers do you see? You can count them. Two atria, two ventricles equals four, right? So there's four chambers. The two superior are atria, the two inferior are ventricles. So there are four chambers. Another good question I could ask you is how many, valves are there? But I got to tell you what the function of a valve is. So I see a valve right here. It allows blood to flow from this atrium, and so this so happens to be the right atrium, into the right ventricle. It allows that. These little flaps open up. But it prevents blood from going from the right ventricle back up into the right atrium, right? So flow of blood through the heart is only one direction. It goes into an atrium, into a ventricle, and then into a blood vessel. And the same on the left side of the heart. Blood flows into an atrium, then into a ventricle, and then into a blood vessel. And it's the valves that make sure that blood flows only in one direction. So let's review. How many chambers does the heart have? Four. How many valves does the heart have? Okay. Well, that's a really easy answer. And you will just tell me four. All right, there's going to be four valves. So how many chambers are there? Four. How many valves are there? Four. Right? So you know the chambers now, right? Because this is the right side, and I see it in blue. Here's the left side in red. There are two atria superior near the base. There are two ventricles down below them. So that's four chambers. Let's look at the four valves. And don't forget what the function of a valve is. So when blood flows into the right atrium, right, this right atrium contracts very weakly, pushes some blood into the right ventricle. Here is a valve that prevents that retrograde flow of blood. It's on the right side of the heart. It's between an atrium and a ventricle. Sometimes that is called an atrioventricular valve, an atrioventricular valve, or sometimes an AV valve. But it has a particular name as well. It doesn't have two flaps, it actually has three. I only see two on this illustration, but it has three. Sometimes these little flaps are called leaflets, sometimes they're called cusps, and in this particular case, because this one has three, this is called the tricuspid valve. And you just have to be familiar, what side of the heart contains the tricuspid valve? It's going to be the right side of the heart. So the tricuspid valve is the right atrioventricular valve. Prevents retrograde flow of blood from a ventricle to an atrium. Oh, I use the term retrograde. What does retrograde mean? What does retrograde mean? Retrograde means going backwards. Right? So we like to use that term. And remember, a nerve impulse never goes retrograde either. It always goes forward. It never goes backwards, right? Blood flow through the heart should never go backwards either. And it's a job of these valves. Let's flip over to the other side of the heart. What do we call the other side of the heart? If this is the right, then this is going to be the left side of the heart. And here is an atrium, here is the left atrium, here's the left ventricle, and look, here is another valve. Here is another atrioventricular valve. It's on the left side of the heart. And indeed, if we count the number of leaflets right here, we see only two. And so there's another name for the left atrioventricular valve, and it is called the bicuspid valve. Bicuspid valve. In lab, when we take a look at that thing, you're going to see that it has two flaps, like my two hands. They come together like this, and it reminded somebody of a hat that you would put on your head like this, and that's called a mitre. Right? And I don't know if you've ever seen anybody wearing a mitre. Sometimes the Pope wears one. You ever hear the Pope? You know who the Pope is, probably, because he's on TV all the time. Right? So that's called a mitre. So sometimes this is called the mitral valve. So this particular atrioventricular valve is the bicuspid or mitral valve, and people use those two names in the same sentence even sometimes, right? So you got to be familiar with that. Okay, so how many valves have we looked at so far? Okay, we looked at the tricuspid valve and the bicuspid valve, right? So we've looked at two. How many more do we got to find? Two more, right? Because there's four chambers, four valves. All right, let's flip back over to the right side. So here is the right ventricle. It's going to contract very strongly and pump blood into this blood vessel right above it. Right? When blood gets into this blood vessel, it should not flow back into the heart, right? Because that's going to kill the heart. It's going to kill the person eventually. So here is a valve that prevents that retrograde flow from this artery back into the right ventricle. And this is what we call a semilunar valve. And the name of this artery here is called the pulmonary artery. And we see pulmonary arteries taking blood to the lungs. So this thing we call the pulmonary semilunar valve. Pulmonary semilunar valve. Looking over at the left side of the heart, here's the left ventricle. And here is the artery that the left ventricle pumps blood into. And the name of this artery is called the aorta. So the valve that I see right here, this is a semilunar valve, just like the pulmonary semilunar valve. The shape is very similar, right? And so we call them semilunar valves. This one here is called the aortic semilunar valve because it's at the root or the base of the aorta. The pulmonary semilunar valve is at the base or the root of the pulmonary artery. Okay, so how many valves have we looked at now? Two atrioventricular, two semilunar, and those are just general names for those valves. You should know the specific name as well, right? Other than right and left. Like tricuspid, bicuspid, aortic semilunar valve, pulmonary semilunar valve. So how are you going to remember that the tricuspid is over here on the right, bicuspid is over here on the left? A little funny saying, you should try before you by. All right, so it doesn't spell out exactly right, but it sounds the way it should be, the way you should use it, right? So tricuspid, bicuspid, remember those are atrioventricular valves. Here is a separation between the ventricles. This is what we call a septum. Here's an interventricular septum. Remember, you had a nasal septum, which separated the two nostrils from each other, both part of the nasal cavity, but it's a wall, so here's a wall between the ventricles. There's also a wall between the atria. Take a guess what the name of that wall is between the atria. If this one here is the interventricular septum, this one up here is going to be called the?
Interatrial.
Yeah, interatrial septum or atrial septum, right? So again, a septum is just a wall. All right, so let's review real quick. How many chambers are there? There's four. How many valves are there? So it's really easy, right? So you're just not going to forget that now. It's really easy. And I don't think I heard anybody say that before class. So that's good. You learned a lot already. All right, I see some arrows on this illustration, right? And that's really important because in this big, huge red blood vessel, which way are the arrows pointing? Are they pointing toward the heart or away from the heart? Can you see this arrow right here? Toward or away from the heart?
Away.
Yeah, it's away from the heart. So any blood vessel that's taking blood away from the heart is an artery. That's the definition of an artery, right? That's the only definition that works. So if you see a blood vessel and it's colored red or blue, that can't tell you if it's an artery or a vein. It's only the direction. So here, these arrows are taking blood away from the heart, so that has to be an artery. This is the aorta. Everybody's so familiar with the aorta, we never say aorta, artery, or aortic artery. We just know that the aorta is the biggest artery in your body, taking blood away from the heart. And what color is the aorta here? It's red. That has significance, we'll talk about in just a second. All right, so here is a blue blood vessel. Which way are the arrows pointing for this one? Away from the heart. What kind of blood vessel takes blood away from the heart? An artery, a vein, capillary? Okay. A blood vessel that takes blood away from the heart, like this red one here, is an artery. A blood vessel that takes blood away from the heart, like this blue one right here, is an artery as well. All right, so that can be a little tricky. So you got to see that. All right, so it's only the direction of blood flow, not the color. Here is another red blood vessel. Look at the direction of the arrow. Is it to the heart or away from the heart? It's toward the heart. So is this an artery or a vein? It's got to be a vein because veins return blood to the heart. Even though it's red, okay, it's still a vein because it's bringing blood to the heart. What about this blue blood vessel here, bringing blood toward the heart or away? It's bringing toward, so this is it's a vein, right, bringing blood to the heart. So arteries can either be colored red like the aorta or blue like the pulmonary artery. Veins can be colored red like this pulmonary vein, or they could be colored blue like this vena cava. And the vena cava is a vein because that just means big cavernous vein is what that name means, right? So it is a vein. It's nice when the answer key is actually part of the name. All right, and on this slide, just to brush up on some anatomy, here is one that is located or empties into the right atrium superiorly. Here's one that empties in inferiorly, so this is the superior vena cava. This one down here is going to be the inferior vena cava, right? If one is superior, the other is the inferior. And so that's a lot about the heart. Okay, but I got another couple of questions for you. And so let's just start again with review. How many chambers does the heart have? How many valves does the heart have? And how many sides does the heart have? Okay, take a look at the colors. The colors will tell you that. How many colors do you see right here? Two, and that's the correct answer for the number of sides of the heart. So the heart has definitely a left side and a right side, and they are distinct from each other, right? And actually the heart is not a pump, it is actually two pumps that are connected together via the septum, right? So there are two pumps. Which pump do we want to consider first? Let's consider the left side, because this is the one that conceptually maybe we're most familiar with. The left ventricle pumps blood into the aorta, okay, and it is red colored. That red color means that it is loaded with oxygen, and your tissues and your body need oxygen. All those mitochondria, all those cells need oxygen to make ATP. So the aorta takes blood away from the heart, right, because it's an artery, and where does it deliver this blood? What do you see right here? Do you see like an eyeball or a liver or a hand or a knee? What do you see right here? I see a whole human body, right? So this aortic artery takes blood to the whole human body eventually, right? This aorta is going to bifurcate into smaller and smaller arteries and deliver oxygen to your whole body. Doesn't matter if it's the tip of your head or the tip of your toe. It's those two places and every place in between. Those tissues remove oxygen from the blood. Okay, and then when that blood is relatively low in oxygen, we change the color to blue. So blue means relatively low in oxygen. And then that relatively low oxygenated blood goes where? back to the heart, to the right side of the heart. And so what do we call this blue blood vessel bringing blood back to the heart? That's a vein. Exactly right. And in particular, it's called a vena cava. But a vein is the correct answer. And this particular vein, what's the state of oxygen in this blood vessel, in this vein? Is it high or low? It is low because it's blue. That's what that color coding means. Right, so then it goes into the right side of the heart, which is a separate pump from the left side. They definitely have to work together, but there's actually two different pumps. Blood from your whole body goes into the right atrium. It's pumped into the right ventricle. And, of course, you have these valves preventing retrograde flow. Then the right ventricle pumps it into the pulmonary artery. So is this figure correct or incorrect in coloring this pulmonary artery blue? Would you agree that this is an artery? And how would you know? How could you convince me that this pulmonary blood vessel right here is an artery? Because look at the direction of the arrow, right? It's taking blood away from the heart. Even though it's relatively low in oxygen, taking blood away from the heart, it's an artery. And where does this artery take blood? To the lungs, and only to the lungs, right? And if you want to consider anything to do with the lungs, like if you want to see a doctor that knows something about the lungs, maybe you have lung cancer, right, or emphysema, something like that, you would go see a pulmonologist, right? So pulmonary medicine has to do with the lungs. So anytime you hear this word pulmonary, you should automatically just think of lung, right? Just like osteo is bone, chondro is cartilage, right? On and on and on. So pulmonary refers to the lungs, and so the pulmonary artery brings blood to the lungs, and guess what happens in the lungs? Okay, the carbon, oxygen enters the blood, right? And the byproduct of respiration, which takes place in the body, is released. So we call that exchange. CO2, carbon dioxide, leaves, oxygen goes in, and when oxygen goes into the blood, what happens to the blood on this illustration? Do you see anything changing between these really tiny vessels here and these tiny vessels here? What's the difference between these two? Okay. Yeah, it doesn't say oxygen on this slide, but you are exactly right. But what do you see on this slide? What changed? The color. Yeah, the color changed, right? And so this red signifies high in oxygen. The blue signifies low, right? And when you said over here, on this illustration, we have high oxygen in these blood vessels. You're exactly right. And it's the color that tells you that. Okay, there are special kinds of blood vessels, right? And these small ones right here are what we call capillaries. They're microscopic. You can't see them. And this is the only place where exchange can take place from blood to tissues. So exchange happens only in a capillary. So now we know three kinds of blood vessels, right? We have a vessel that takes blood away from the heart. That's an artery. We have teeny, teeny, tiny ones where exchange takes place. What's the name of a blood vessel where exchange can take place? That is a capillary. And then here's another blood vessel bringing blood back to the heart. That is a vein, right? So the three major kinds of vessels are arteries, capillaries, veins. Just like that. And usually there's only one capillary bed in this circulation. Okay, so here is, I think I've talked about almost everything of importance right now. So how many chambers does the heart have? How many valves? How many sides? Two. All right, and so each side of the heart pumps blood through a particular circulation. The left ventricle, which contains highly oxygenated blood, goes through the systemic circulation or systemic circuit, which is everywhere in your body except your lungs, right? And the right ventricle pumps blood through the pulmonary circuit. So there are basically two circulations in your body, and therefore you need two hearts, right? Two pumps. They're just joined together right at the septum. All right, you're going to be really bored with me, but I got to ask you again. How many chambers does the heart have? How many valves does the heart have? How many sides does the heart have? Two. How many circulations are there in your body? Two. right? Because the heart has two different sides. Okay, so those are the important kinds of questions. All right, so again, the definition, artery takes blood away from the heart, a capillary is for exchange, and a vein always brings blood back to the heart. That's how that goes. Okay. All right, so I've got a nice trick question for you. This is probably pretty important. So what's the state of blood in this aorta right here in terms of oxygen? It's high. It's high, right? So here is high oxygen. Let's stop this person's heart, okay? And so what happens to this oxygen that's in the aorta? Can it release that oxygen to tissues around it to maintain the life of those tissues? What happens to this oxygen that's in the aorta? That's an artery. What happens to that oxygen? You know what? It's trapped. It cannot get out because what is the only kind of blood vessel where exchange can take place? Only capillaries, right? So when somebody's heart stops, all of this blood and all of these arteries is high in oxygen, but it can't get to the tissues because the heart is not beating. And it's trapped there, right? So a person's body is, some organs rapidly die, like the brain, for instance, when somebody's heart stops. But all these blood vessels that are right near the brain are high in oxygen, but that oxygen can't get into the brain because these arteries are not capillaries. But you know what? You could save somebody's life by moving this blood that's in all of these arteries into the brain. And all that oxygen that was trapped now can leave these capillaries because the brain has capillaries. How would you move this blood and all these arteries to the brain to save somebody's life whose heart is not beating? What could you do? Chest compressions, right? If you know CPR, that's the point of CPR. Even though when you do chest compressions, it's not going to be like working exactly like the person's heart, but you can get enough of this oxygenated blood up to this person's brain, right, to keep the brain alive. Maybe not enough to make them wake up and be conscious and run around, right, but maybe enough to keep them alive until they can get to a hospital and the hospital then, or get to a defibrillator and get this heart going once again, right? So anything that's in an artery is trapped in there. Anything that's in a vein is trapped right there. Exchange only takes place in a capillary, right? So that's the whole point of CPR. And I think that's why they changed the CPR rules not too long ago. For CPR, a while back, you were to give the same number of breaths to a person as heart pumps, an equal number. But they changed CPR, so now you do more chest compressions than you do breathing, because breathing is not as important, because look at all this blood in their body. It's full of oxygen. You just got to get it to the vital organs, right? So breathing is sort of important, but it's more important to get this blood to vital organs like the brain. So that makes perfect sense. So that's really a super diagram that you should review, all right, a lot. So the right side, pulmonary circulation, left side, systemic circulation, chamber separations are the septa. Valves, we got four valves in the heart, right? The right side is the tricuspid. The right atrioventricular valve is the tricuspid. The left atrioventricular valve is the bicuspid, because it only has two cusps to it, right? And then you get the semilunar valves at the root of the great arteries coming off the base of the heart, like the pulmonary semilunar valve and the aortic semilunar valve. All right, so what is the function of these chambers? Well, that's a pretty good question, right? Any of these chambers right here, they contract, right? So think of a water balloon. Grab it with two hands and squeeze down on the water balloon. What's happening to the pressure inside that water balloon? Is it staying the same? Is it changing? Is it going up, going down? What do you think? What happens if you squeeze it really, really hard? What's going to happen to it? It's going to burst because the pressure is way too high. Right, so all of these chambers in the heart contract, they get smaller, that pressurizes the blood, that pressure is the force that moves blood through both of these circulations. Right, so what's the function of a chamber? It pumps blood, either through the pulmonary or systemic circulation. What's the function of a valve? It prevents, you could say, backward flow of blood, but probably a better term would be what? The retrograde flow of blood. Prevents retrograde flow of blood. So those are some pretty good questions. Okay, let me see what I want to talk about here next. Okay, well, we're interested in layers of the heart. Let's take a look at some layers of the heart. What did I skip over? This is pretty good. Here's a review for you. Here is a nice transverse section through the chest at the level of the heart. So here we see the heart in the mediastinum. We see the two lungs in the pleural cavities. And if we look at the pleural cavities, I see a membrane that is right on the surface of the thorax. And then I see a membrane right on the surface of the lung. And this particular cavity right here is not open to the outside world. So this is what we call a serous membrane. Right? A mucous membrane is lining the cavity open to the outside world. A serous membrane lines the cavity not open to the outside world. And a serous membrane, this was even on the test, the very first test, right? So the part of the serous membrane on the body wall is what we call the parietal, right, division. The membrane that's right on the organ, that's the visceral division, right? So here is the visceral pleura, here is the parietal pleura, and then here is a space, right, which we filled with serous fluid, right? That's the pleural space. Well, the heart is surrounded by a membrane. And the area that the heart is in is not open to the outside world, so it is a serous membrane as well. All right, so can I see it on this slide? Not so well. Okay, so let me go to the slide right here. All right, so here we see the heart. What part of the heart do I have the cursor on right now? Just as a quick review. Here is apex. Up over here is the base. Nice. Two important landmarks. Let's look at the wall of the heart right up over here in this atrium. What atrium is this? Can you remember what atrium this is? Yeah, it's the left atrium. Okay. Let's look at layers through the heart. Right? Sometimes we call that transmural. If we look through a blood vessel or look through all the walls of the heart, or walls of a digestive tract, any kind of tube. The membrane on the outside of the heart is called the pericardium. What do we call that membrane on the outside of a bone? Periosteum, right? Osteo is bone. Peri means surrounding. All right, so anytime you see this word cardium or myocardium, you should think of heart, right? If you hear pulmonary, what organ should you think of? Pulmonary is lung, right? Cardium, cardio is heart. Pericardium is the membrane that surrounds the heart. That's the first layer. Then the next deepest layer is called the myocardium. And myocardium just means that this is the muscle layer. This is the functional, contractional layer of the heart. So you got pericardium on the outside, myocardium in the middle, and just like a bone that has a membrane on the inside, right, all those medullary cavities and medullary spaces, remember that was called the endosteum. Guess what we call the membrane that's inside the heart, layers the inside of the heart? That is the endocardium, right? So you got pericardium, myocardium, endocardium, three layers that make up the heart. Right? And I see it on this illustration, right? If we zoom into the atrium, here we see it. Here we see the heart chamber. We know that to be the left atrium. Here is the membrane on the inside of the heart. This is the endocardium. Next layer is the myocardium. And then we see the epicardium on top of that. Right, so pretty much like a bone, right, as far as these layers are concerned. All right, well, a bone can support itself, but the heart cannot, right, because there are no bones inside the heart. So there is, the heart sits in its own particular little cavity called the pericardial cavity, which means it's a cavity that surrounds the heart. And the heart is a visceral organ, so there is a serous membrane around the heart. The layer that's right on the heart, remember, we call that the epicardium. If we just think of the layers of the heart, but if we think of the membrane system on the outside only, then this epicardium is also going to be called the visceral epicardium, right? The visceral layer, because it's sitting right on the surface of the heart. Then we have that serous fluid that we call the pericardial cavity, and then it folds back on itself. This is what we call the parietal layer of the pericardium, or parietal pericardium, right? Just like on the lungs, you had a visceral pleura, the pleural space, and the parietal pleura. On the heart, we've got the visceral pericardium, the pleural space, pericardial space, and then the parietal pericardium, right? Just like around the lungs. And there's this space right here. The space probably should be about a centimeter or less, right? And if it gets thicker than that, then that signifies an inflammation, right, or infection of the pericardium. We don't like that because the heart is right here. We don't want to have a heart infection because that can damage valves and the muscle, right? And so that does something else, right? When the pericardial cavity fills up with fluid, right, the heart gets compressed. Right? So when the pericardium fills up with fluid, it doesn't allow the heart to expand. It compresses the heart. And why is that such a really bad thing? If there's fluid in the pericardial space, these chambers get smaller. So blood can't flow into them. And if blood can't flow in, guess what happens when the heart pumps? It can't pump very much blood, right? So blood has to flow into the heart before it can be pumped. If there is an enlargement of this pericardial cavity, then somebody's heart is not going to be functioning the way it should. And a lot of times, very quickly, okay, physician can insert a hypodermic needle right here, aspirate some of that fluid out, and then the heart can fill normally, and it's just miraculous when that happens. Okay? Okay, so don't forget about this little space right here. So here is the visceral pericardium, here's the pericardial cavity, here's the parietal pericardium, and then the thing that holds the heart in location is this fibrous pericardium. It's tough, has a lot of collagen fibers. All right, so we got the fibrous pericardium and the parietal layer coming together right here. Let me go back to the word slide. All right, transmural layers, epi, myo, endo, right? Okay, blood flow, we're going to draw this out on the board probably pretty soon. Fibrous skeleton I didn't talk about. Oh, layers, here are the layers way up over here, right? You have the serous pericardium, which contains what? Every serous membrane has three parts, the parietal division, the space, the visceral pericardium. Right? And the heart also has another membrane that holds it in space. That's the fibrous pericardium. That's the tough, dense connective tissue that holds it in place. Any questions on layers of the heart or those membranes that surround the heart? Okay, just remember, three layers, the transmural layers. Blood flow through the heart. Okay. All right, well, let's look at blood flow through the heart. We kind of looked at it already, and I'm going to put that slide up for you to look at right here. Blood flow through the heart, and how many different directions should blood flow through the heart? One, or two, or backwards and forwards, okay? Blood should flow through the heart in one direction, okay? And that direction is always from an atrium to a ventricle into an artery, right? Whether it's on the right side of the heart or the left side. On the left side, it is left atrium, left ventricle, aorta. On the right side, right atrium, right ventricle, pulmonary artery. So let's trace a drop of blood around through these two circulations. And as a little preparation for that, let's just answer all those questions one more time. But don't throw anything at me. Okay? How many chambers does the heart have? How many valves does the heart have? How many sides does the heart have? Two. How many circulations are there? Two. Right. Okay. That's nice. So let's just write it down. Try to have that picture in your mind, but let's just write it down. Let's trace a drop of blood through both of these circulations and also then write down what the state of blood is in each of those locations. Okay, where would you like to start? Douglas, where would you like to start? Atrium, which atrium? Left atrium, you want to start in left atrium? Okay, so we have a blood in the left atrium, right? So L, atrium. What's the state of blood in the left atrium? Tell me what color it is. It's red. So what's the state of blood there? High oxygen or low? High, because it's red, right? That's what red means. Okay. So let's just say I'll put an up arrow for oxygen being high, down arrow if it's low in oxygen. Okay. If it is high in oxygen, it also means that it's low in CO2, like that. All right, so after the left atrium, where does blood flow? What does it flow past? Okay, so it's going to go into the left ventricle, but it's got to pass something first before it gets there. It is an atrioventricular. All right, so let's put left, marker's drying off, left ventricle. What does it have to go past first? An atrioventricular valve, and on the left side, it is called the bicuspid, right? Try before you buy, bicuspid, and another name is what, mitral, and don't forget that is what kind of valve? An AV valve, atrioventricular valve, right? Atrioventricular valve, bicuspid, on the left side. What's the state of blood as it's passing the bicuspid valve? Yeah, high in oxygen. I'm just going to put some quotation marks here, meaning the same as what's above it. What's the state of blood in the left ventricle? Because you told me that after the bicuspid, blood flows into the left ventricle. Do you agree with that? Yeah. What's the state of blood there? It's high in oxygen. Okay, from the left ventricle, what does it have to flow by? I heard. Does it flow into a vessel or past the valve first? It's got to go past the valve first. And what is that valve? It is the aortic semilunar valve. I'm going to abbreviate valve with a V. Okay, aortic semilunar valve. What's the state of blood as it's passing through the aortic semilunar valve? Yeah, it's still red, right? So it's still high. All right, and then after the aortic semilunar valve, this isn't so fun, but what does it flow into? The aorta. What's the state of oxygen in the aorta? It's got to be high, right, because it's still red. Aorta then takes blood, okay, to which circulation? Pulmonary or systemic? Pulmonary or systemic? Aorta takes blood to the, and it's on the slide, the systemic circulation. Okay, so here's the aorta taking blood to the systemic circulation. And what is the next blood vessel in the systemic circulation that this blood goes into? And here it is right here. A capillary. So I'm going to be very specific and say systemic capillary. Systemic capillary, which means what? Your whole body. And what's the state of blood in a systemic capillary? And it's a terrible question because there's no right answer. Okay? But there's some. But I wanted to get your attention because there's something very special that's taking place right here. And that is, all right, it's not high or low in CO2. A capillary is for, I'm going to put it in parentheses, exchange. Okay, which means what? O2 goes out. And what about CO2? CO2 goes in. That's what exchange means. All right, and then when that happens, all right, what is the next blood vessel? After systemic capillaries. Then it is the vena cava. One is just spelled V-E-N-A, C-A-V-A. Right? On the slide it's plural, but here is vena cava. Now, what's the state of blood in a vena cava? Changes color, I'm sure, right? Which means it is low in oxygen, because that's what happened here, because oxygen went out. What about CO2? CO2 goes in, so CO2 is now high. Like so. Where does blood go after the vena cava? So we're going to come all the way over to here. After vena cava, blood flows into the I'm going to abbreviate RA for right atrium. Got to get a better marker. The colors on the board, oh, look at that, that's nice and dark. I don't think it should make any sense. I didn't draw it with red and blue like in your textbook. That would have been nice. What's the state of blood in the right atrium? Low or high in oxygen? High CO2, right? Just like in a vena cava. And then right atrium, blood flows through the right ventricle, but we forgot something. It's got to pass something first. It's got to pass a valve. What valve is it going through? Here, and it's the right atrioventricular valve. The right, remember, tri before you buy. So here is the tricuspid. And remember, that's an AV valve. What's the state of blood as it passes the tricuspid AV valve? It's got to be the same as in the right atrium, so I'm just going to put a quotation mark. Low in oxygen, high in CO2. After the tricuspid, where does it flow into? The RV. People talk about it just like that. Don't have to say right ventricle. You can say LA, LV, RA, RV for those different chambers if you want to. Okay. What's the state of blood in that right ventricle? Low in oxygen. After the right ventricle, what does it have to pass? There's a valve at the root of the artery taking blood away from the right ventricle. It is the pulmonary semilunar valve. I'll abbreviate that with a V. What's the state of blood as it's passing the pulmonary semilunar valve? Same as the right ventricle, so I'm going to put quotation marks there once again. Okay. Pulmonary semilunar valve, where does blood go as it passes the pulmonary semilunar valve? Into the blood vessel, right there, taking blood away from the heart, which is an artery, and it's the pulmonary artery. What's the state of blood in the pulmonary artery? Is it low or high? Same right here, right? So I'm going to actually put that in. Right? I could put quotation marks, but low in oxygen, high in CO2. Pulmonary artery takes blood to pulmonary capillary. Now, what's special about this? Exchange, right? Capillaries have exchange. So what happens? What about oxygen? O2 goes in. What about CO2? CO2 goes out in a pulmonary capillary. And then I think we got one more blood vessel left. After the pulmonary capillaries, where does blood go to? Before it gets to the the pulmonary vein. And now what is blood? Pulmonary vein is high in oxygen, low in CO2. Pulmonary vein takes blood to the, look at that, we've made the complete circuit right here. So pulmonary vein is high in oxygen, left atrium is high in oxygen, right? Just like it should be. All right, so here we see how many circulations? Systemic versus pulmonary, there's two. How many sides does the heart have? Two, because of these two circulations. All right. Look at something here that I want to point out to you. Let's look at the aorta. Here's the aorta. What's the state of blood in the aorta? Oh, and remember, the aorta is what kind of blood vessel? An artery or a vein or a capillary? Artery. Forget about the color, right? Aorta, that's an artery. What's the state of blood in this artery? High in oxygen. Right. What about the state of blood in the pulmonary artery? Where's pulmonary? Here's pulmonary artery. What's the state of oxygen there? It's low, right? So the pulmonary artery is opposite compared to the aorta, right? Because the aorta is what? High in oxygen, low in CO2. So these two circulations are like opposite each other. But because they're opposite each other, they work together very nicely, picking up oxygen in the lungs, delivering that oxygen to the tissues everywhere. All right, so here is, that's why this figure right here is so important, right, because it defines what an artery is, what a vein, and it can be confusing. So let me ask you, can there ever be oxygenated blood in an artery? Yeah, and name, so you said yes, that's great, okay, but now you got to tell me what artery. What artery can be low in oxygen? Yeah, pulmonary, any pulmonary artery is going to be low in oxygen, right, because the pulmonary artery is taking blood to the lungs, and what's the whole purpose of going to the lungs? To pick up oxygen, right, so the pulmonary artery is low, and it picks up oxygen, and then what can you tell me about the pulmonary vein? It is high in oxygen, right? Because it's coming back from the lungs and it picked up oxygen when it was in the lungs. Okay, so that's pretty good. When you see that, might have to look at it a couple times, but that will be really wonderful to do that. And I might make something like this like an extra credit quiz in lab, because you should have that picture in your mind. You should know that flow diagram. You should know the sides of the heart, the names of the valves, and the state of blood and everything. That's just really nice basic physiology and anatomy, right? Okay. All right, so what else should we talk about in here? Blood flow through the heart, we got that. Coronary circulation, fibrous skeleton. Okay, maybe I can find something on the fibrous skeleton. Maybe I'll talk about coronary circulation first. Because here we are. All right, so the three landmarks that you have to know for the heart. What are those three landmarks once again? Number one is apex, number two, and number three, anterior longitudinal sulcus. If you see all those things, then you know that the left side of the heart is here, the right side is there, and of course the inferior side is the apex and superior is up by the base. So let's look at the chambers first. Here is the right atrium. Here is the right ventricle. The right ventricle, remember, had really thick muscle. It's a powerful pump compared to the right atrium. The right atrium is very thin. It's a very weak muscle. And, oh, too bad I turned the lights down. But, for instance, if you can see my hand right here, when a ventricle contracts, I'll turn the light on, okay, because it's actually sort of interesting. When a ventricle contracts, okay, it's a very strong muscle. It goes boom, 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 like that. That's why it pounds up against your chest wall, right? So here is a ventricle. Here's how an atria contracts. Now, how does that impress you? Very weak, right? So the atria in humans is fairly non-functional, right? It can pump some blood into a ventricle, but not very much. And therefore, okay, it has a very thin wall, But that really doesn't matter because the atrium doesn't have to pump blood very far, right? It's just right next door into the ventricle just below it. All right, so here is the right atrium, right ventricle. Over here is the left atrium, really thin wall. Here is the left ventricle. There is an edge on an atrium that kind of looks a little ruffled right here. Right? It's a very thin muscle. This is what we call an auricle because it reminded somebody of the flaps that make up your ear. Do you agree that this part of your ear is called the auricle? Right? What would you call this part of your ear right here? Has all that nice elastic cartilage in it. That is the, what would you call that? Auricle. Auricle's great, right? That's the auricle. So this edge right here of an atrium is called an auricle. This would be the right auricle. Here's the left. Some people use auricle and atrium interchangeably, and that's not really correct, so you have to just look at how they're using those terms within a sentence to know what they're talking about, right? An auricle is actually part of an atrium. So an atrium is really the chamber and all the muscle walls that make it up. So here is the right atrium. We see the auricle here, auricle on the left. Right, so here is a blood vessel that's attached to the left ventricle. Big artery taking blood away from the heart, colored red, so it's high in oxygen. You should be able to name this blood vessel coming from the left ventricle. As a matter of fact, we wrote it on the board. Here is the aorta. Right? So here is ascending aorta moving away from the base of the heart. Then it makes a 180-degree turn. This is the arch of the aorta. And then we don't see it, so I'm not going to mention it right now. Then it goes behind the heart where we can't see it. That would be part of the descending aorta. So aorta's got ascending, arch, and descending. And right at the base of the aorta, actually right within the aortic semilunar valves, there are two blood vessels, two small blood vessels. And here's one. Here is the right coronary. A coronary blood vessel has to do with the heart, right? The coronary artery brings blood to the heart. Coronary vein takes blood away from the heart. So here is the right one. And then over here, going behind this vessel, but it's still coming from the aorta, is the, take a guess which one this is here. If this is right, how many sides does the heart have? Two. If this is right, this is the left coronary. Exactly right. Okay, then it bifurcates. When blood vessels bifurcate, we usually change their name because we don't want to confuse those two blood vessels. The part that goes up over here between the atria and ventricles, we call that the circumflex coronary artery. The one that goes down through that anterior longitudinal sulcus is called the left anterior descending. Sometimes it's called the LAD. Most people just say LAD. Most important coronary artery on the surface of the heart, and unfortunately this is the one that gets damaged the most, that gets blocked, right? The most important one gets blocked, and then you have to figure out what to do if the person is still alive, right? Maybe sometimes you can just go in there with a balloon and inflate it, open up the artery. Sometimes you have to put in another pipe from one part to another, right? Just depending on the nature of the disease in that particular blood vessel, right? And when this blood vessel then gets opened up, since it's going to the left side of the heart, then the left side of the heart can regain function. Maybe it hasn't died. Hopefully it hasn't died. And then the function can come back to some degree, hopefully 100%. All right, so this right here, remember, anterior longitudinal sulcus contains the anterior descending, and it goes to the left side of the heart, left anterior descending. In this sulcus, there's a great cardiac vein. It's going to bring blood back to the heart. So here is, and this is the last thing, this is kind of hard to see, and I'll mention it next time. Coronary circulation brings blood to the heart. Oxygenated blood takes deoxygenated blood away from the heart. So is the coronary circulation part of the systemic circulation or pulmonary circulation? Arteries are high in oxygen, veins are low. Pulmonary or systemic? Pulmonary or systemic? that artery was red. So in which circulation are arteries color-coded red? Systemic. So coronary circulation is part of the systemic circulation. The job of the systemic circulation is to deliver oxygen to organs in your body that need it and carry away CO2. The same thing for the coronary circulation. Right? Coronary circulation delivers oxygen to the heart via this left anterior descending. Blood is returned back to the right atrium via the cardiac veins. Right? So these blood vessels that we're looking right here, a special circulation because they're going to the heart, so we call it coronary, but they're still just a part of the systemic circulation because this heart needs oxygen. And that's the job of the systemic circulation, to deliver oxygen to organs. Remember, the pulmonary circulation job is to get blood that's low in oxygen, oxygenate it, and then deliver that to the left atrium so that the left ventricle can pump it everywhere in the body. All right, so if I think of one last little graphic, it might make sense, maybe not. Okay, if I see the systemic circulation like this, how would you give me a symbol for pulmonary circulation? If I see systemic like this, the pulmonary circulation is going to be like that, right? It's going to be opposite. Just think in opposite terms. And notice they kind of fit together really nice. So systemic and pulmonary circulations fit together very nicely. Okay, sign-in sheet is going around someplace. I'm going to go open up the, here it is right here. Anybody need it? We're all good. Thank you. I'm going to open up the study room. If you want to review some anatomy, and maybe I'll cruise by there.